This is Karen Musgrave, and I am conducting a Quilters SOS Save Our Stories interview with Stephanie Gripson. Stephanie is in Marvelsville, Indiana, and I'm in Naperville, Illinois, so we're conducting this interview over the telephone. Today's date is January 28th, 2009. It is now 1:05 in the afternoon. And Stephanie, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to do this interview with me.
Thank you.
Please tell me about your quilt, American Renaissance.
I was so inspired by this whole political thing that happened in our country this last election. I really had a lot of pent-up emotion, much of which I didn't understand. And one of my fellow quilt artists, Sherry Borum, called and said, you've got to do a quilt for this exhibit about Obama. Can you get one done? And my response, of course, was absolutely, when's the deadline? So I immediately kind of formulated some ideas in my head about, well, what is it that I want to put into this quilt? Where do I start? And I had a campaign poster hanging in my dining room, and that was the inspiration for the quilt. The image of Obama in the center of that poster, I just loved the picture because his face is tilted up toward the light, so that it's his facial features that are highlighted. And I just felt that was such a wonderful analogy of what was happening to the country, that we were being tilted up toward the light. So I knew that I wanted that to be in the center of the quilt. And I initially scanned it into the computer, digitally manipulated it until I could see light, medium, and dark values. And didn't really have any idea how to go. I'd never made a portrait quilt before, so I just sat down and started putting one together, and I did it in shades of gray and got it all sewn together and hung it on the design wall, which is my dining room wall, and looked at it for several days and decided this wasn't quite right or that wasn't quite right. It didn't quite look like Obama, so I started trimming it. And before I knew it, it had morphed from Obama into Marvin Gaye. So back to the drawing board, and I redid it. And this time I did it in blue, and I used the iron-on fusible. And that technique worked much better than the piecing technique with the curved seams. So got the image done, and it actually looked like the photo of Obama on the campaign poster. And I knew that I wanted it on a white background, that white was to be the center medallion, and that white was representing hope, which was the whole theme of the campaign. And I knew that I wanted it to be red, white, and blue. I knew that I wanted it to be simple, but I had tons of beads and ribbons, and this was going to be a fabulously embellished quilt. But as it slowly came together, my thinking about it changed completely, and I began to feel like it really needed to be simple, and it needed to be traditional. So the background is just a collection of red fabrics, and it's pieced in the most simple 9-patch construction, 2-inch squares. And I thought it was important to piece this quilt on a fairly newly acquired 1894 standard treadle sewing machine, that this was honoring the quilt makers that came before me, that they had quilted on these machines by lantern light and candlelight and by the window of daylight. And it just amazes me that women were able to put together quilts under those conditions. So using the treadle machine for the piecing was important. The blue border is 4-patch construction, same technique, also pieced on the treadle sewing machine. And this was the first project I'd done on this treadle machine, and I absolutely loved sewing on it. It has a wonderfully smooth action. I feel like I'm in complete control of the needle and where it's going. I like it much better than sewing on an electric machine, but it's very limited. It only came with 1 foot, and I can't find another one for it. So the simple cotton 9-patch and 4-patch construction was important to keep it simple, to honor the American traditional quilt makers in our past. Once I got the background pieced and the image appliqued on, Then I moved to my electric machine, which is a 1970 Kenmore. That's my new machine. And I did the applique and so forth on that machine because I can go to a zigzag stitch on it. And I had it kind of put together and thought, it needs some kind of little something to give it some oomph. So I had cut out paper stars and kind of had them pinned on the design wall here and there. And my grandnephew came over with his older sister who just got her driver's license. And he looked at it, and this is a fourth grade boy, and said, you know, Aunt Steph, I think you should put 13 stars on there for the 13 original colonies. And his was the most valuable input I got from anyone. So the embellishment ended up being 13 very simple applique stars, and then the binding was a candy cane red and white stripe. So this is a very traditional, unsparkly, unembellished wall hanging. My original plan was 36 inches by 36 inches. The blue border turned out to be a little too wide, so it went down to just a 4-patch size instead of a 9-patch size. I was so full of emotion over the election that working on this quilt really kind of helped me sort through all of that. I mean, I would have days where I would just be so full of intense emotions that I just would cry spontaneously. I didn't know if it was tears of joy, if there was something I was sad about. I really didn't understand. But working on this quilt really helped sort all that nonsense out. And by the time that the quilt was done and the sleeve was on it, I was once again at peace with myself. So it was a very cathartic process. And I threw it together very quickly, less than 2 months. And then as soon as I got it done, off it went in the mail. So none of my friends and family have even seen the quilt. So I'll be eager that they can, when they can actually see it and get their hands on it. What doesn't show until you get close to the quilt is on the red background of the 9-patch that there are, there's text appliqued all over it. And it's just the words that inspired me about Obama, that he became such an inspirational champion of freedom and human rights, which I had just been so appalled that the United States ended up on Amnesty International's list of human rights abusers. I just couldn't believe that that was happening in my lifetime. So here was a man who was saying, yes, we have been guilty of human rights abuses, and we're going to fix that. So I really latched onto that. He advocated ecological responsibility, so that's on the quilt as well. Religious tolerance, that was important, and I hadn't seen a lot of that in the communities. Compassion, peace, diplomacy, the fact that he said that he would open the lines of diplomacy and talk to these people around the world who considered themselves our enemies. Well, if you don't start by talking to people, how will we ever find common ground? He seems to be a man of integrity. He's ethical. He's altruistic. He advocates caring for others, sharing for others, working for a common good. And that above all else, that he just is equanimous. Throughout all of the debates, all of the interviews, he just exhibited an unshakable equanimity, and that was something that I hadn't ever seen in a politician before. So I was so inspired to honor him by making this quilt, and honored also to be invited to participate in a group of quilters that many of the people who are in this are professional quilt makers and studio art quilt artists, and I just sew on my dining room table occasionally, so this was a real honor to be included.
What are your plans for this quilt?
I only had one plan for it, and that was to submit it to this celebration of art quilts that's being held at the Catholic Center at Montgomery College in Silver Spring, Maryland. And once that's over, I don't know. I look forward to showing it to all of the family members and friends who have seen pictures of it but never got to see the actual quilt, and beyond that, I have no plans.
Are you planning on going to the opening?
Yes. Sherry Borium and I are driving. We're going to stop in Ohio and pick up Susan Shee and drive on to Maryland to attend the opening of the exhibit.
I think it'll be very exciting.
Oh, I can't wait. I've seen pictures of the other quilts, but I'm sure that the photographs on the Internet do not do them justice. I can't wait to get close to them and see the textures and the embellishments.
Tell me about your interest in quilt making.
Well, I was drugged kicking and screaming reluctantly into the quilt making world by my sister. She is a beautiful quilt maker. She's a traditional quilt maker, and she drugged me to quilt shows for years before I ever showed any interest in making quilts. She gave me the 1970 Kenmore machine, which had been her machine from, I think, the time she got married. It sat in my dining room for 5 years before I ever opened it up and learned how to thread it. And finally, I think in 2002, she took me to Paducah to the National Quilt Show, and that was the first place I really saw some quilts that I thought were truly inspiring and that I might, yes, begin to see quilting as an art medium and less about kind of a tedious woman's obligation and more about using the machine as a brush and the fabric as paint and to create works of art.
Where did you get your twiddle?
One of my neighbors, a mile or two up the road that I'm involved in, well, in a local quilt guild with, had it sitting in her garage for a couple years. And actually, she had three. And my sister, the quilter, expressed interest in one of Nora's machines. And we went over and ended up taking all three of them. And I took the least complicated of the three machines. They all needed rehabilitation, so I brought one home and tore it down and took all the parts out and cleaned them and oiled them and put it back together and sewed on it, and I just absolutely love that machine. It has a place of honor in my living room, and that's where I quilt on it.
How did you come up with the title, the American Renaissance?
Because that's what it felt like. I mean, it felt like after a long period of darkness and hopelessness and despair and shame that we finally were going to maybe come out of the darkness and move toward the light. And it was a seismic shift. It wasn't just me, and it wasn't just my neighbors and my very few liberal friends that I have. It seemed to be the whole country at once shifted towards something wonderful, and that this really is an American Renaissance, and we're at the very beginning of it, and I can't wait for it to unfold.
I can't remember in my lifetime a president-elect inspiring so much art.
Nor have I.
Why do you think that is?
I honestly don't know. He touched something in me that hadn't been touched in a very long time. I don't have a studio. I have to drag my sewing machine out of the corner of the bedroom and set it up in my dining room. So it really takes some motivation to get me going to tear up the order of the home and take over the dining room as my studio. And it certainly did that. And I left it out for as long as it took to get the quilt done. So I'm assuming that the other people in the rest of the country felt the same way and were equally inspired to do whatever it takes to get something out.
You mentioned belonging to a quilt group. Tell me a little bit more about it. Do you belong to any other groups?
I belong to two local quilt guilds, one in Pendleton, Indiana, one in Anderson, Indiana. But other than receiving the newsletter, I haven't been active in either one of them for a couple years. So one of my New Year's resolutions this year was to actually attend the meetings and put a quilt in the quilt show. That both shows are in the fall, one in September and one in October. So I have a couple unfinished projects that I intend to get done and get entered in the local quilt shows.
Did making the Obama quilt help you make that resolution?
It It did in that it got me sewing again. And so, yes, it did.
Is your Obama quilt typical of your style? If someone looked at that quilt, would they know that you made it?
Not necessarily. I don't know that I have a style. I tend to sew into whatever it is that inspires me at the moment, and it always seems to be something different, so I don't know that I have a style.
Well, do you have any favorite techniques or materials that you like to use?
Well, I don't know a lot of techniques, and I haven't worked with a variety of materials, so my quilting tends to be traditional piecing, and I may throw something in there that some kind of embellishment or something that's non-traditional, but it's pretty simple.
How did you apply the text to the quilt?
Some of it I silk screened. I silk screen prayer flags and sell them at the farmer's market in the summertime along with my perennials. So I cut up one of the red prayer flags and took some of the text off of it and attached it to the quilt. And then I took and left the center that I cut out to place the white medallion. I cut out the fabric behind it, and then I ran that through my printer and actually printed another prayer flag template onto that fabric and then cut it apart and just a raw edge machine applicated on.
What is your first quilt memory?
Oh, I grew up with quilts. Every other year, my grandmother, who I think had 17 grandchildren, one year we would get a flannel nightgown, and the following year we would get a quilt. And the quilts that she made were from our outgrown clothing. So, and they were four patch, and they were all tied. But when you'd get a quilt from Grandma, and they had a flannel back, but they who knows what was in the middle. One year it might be a worn-out blanket. The next year it might be worn-out draperies. Or patched together in someone's old coat. The wonderful thing about those quilts is, and we all have them on our beds, is that you could sit in bed and think, well, that was my Easter dress 2 years ago, and that was my cousin Connie's dress, and this was my dad's flannel shirt. So those quilts, even though they were really, really simple, they were very, very meaningful, and there are a few of them still floating around the family, including one on my mother's bed.
Do you have any left?
I do not. I wore mine out.
Which is probably what she wanted, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And still, that's how I feel about quilts. And I'm very reluctant to go pay $9 a yard for cotton fabric to cut up and use in quilts. I'm more inclined to use leftover bits from other projects or dig through. I rarely go buy any new fabric. I have more than I can store now. I have to climb into the attic to get into my fabric tubs, so... Yeah, I would rather use recycled clothing or something in my quilts.
Tell me about your prayer flags.
They are whatever. They're solid, and they're five colors, red, white, green, blue, and yellow, each color representing an element, earth, air, heat, let's see, green. Earth, air, heat, water, and the all-pervading space of oneness. And they're 100% cotton. I use soy-based inks. I string them on 100% sisal baling twine. So they're completely biodegradable. They are unhemmed. I sew them onto the baling twine, but they're meant to deteriorate and fade, just like everything in life does. So they're impermanent, and it reminds us of the impermanence of life and the preciousness of each moment. And whatever cotton I can come by, that's what I use. I scrounge clearance bins, and I raid my sister's stash. I cut up old clothing, whatever I can get, as long as it's 100% cotton.
And how long have you been doing this?
I started it 2 years ago. I'd always had Tibetan prayer flags, and I brought back some from a trip I made in 2005 to Thailand, India, and Nepal, and I loved those prayer flags, but they were even, the fabric that they were printed on was even more impermanent than an American cotton, so they were getting ragged, quickly getting ragged, and they're in Tibetan. So I thought it was important that we have something in, with an English text on it and a little bit sturdier than the Tibetan flags. So that's what got me started.
What advice would you offer someone starting out in quilt making?
Oh, to just do it, join a guild, work on group quilts, and just be observant of the ladies who've been carrying on this tradition. I have some real precious memories of guild quilts that we've worked on together, and even in traditional ways, sitting around the quilting frame, learning to how to do hand stitches, and knowing that my teacher Jean would probably eventually take my stitches out and redo them. But eventually, I got to where my quilts were acceptable to the guild standards, and my stitches made it into the final quilt. So I'm real grateful to all the women who taught me how to sew. I was 50 years old and had never even threaded a sewing machine. So I had a very, very long learning curve, and fortunately had a lot of patient teachers.
How did you quilt American Renaissance?
I borrowed one of my sister's Berninas with a stitch regular on it, regulator. I'd never used one before. It made all the difference in the world. I had really struggled with machine quilting on my Kenmore machine, and when I borrowed this Bernina, boy, did it ever make light work of the task. And I'll probably borrow it again for my next quilt if I do machine quilting. But I also really enjoy hand stitching. I haven't hand stitched a whole quilt in several years, but one of my grandbabies has a hand stitched quilt that hangs on the wall above her baby sister's quilt. It's been through three babies now and has little rubber ducks quilted into it. And I really enjoyed finishing that quilt. I took it on a meditation retreat with me, and I find the hand stitching to be a wonderful meditative, repetitive, well, a meditation, a movement meditation.
Is there any aspects of quilt making that you don't enjoy?
I have a tendency to get impatient with them, and I've learned that if I try to rush something, I will end up having to tear it out. So I've kind of learned that when I get to that point of impatience, and it's not going as quickly as I planned, or it's not turning out to be as easy as I planned, that I just get up and walk away from it and do something else for a while. So sometimes it may take me a week to get back to the quilt, and sometimes it may take me an hour to get back to the quilt, and sometimes it gets packed away for a month or a year.
What do you think makes an artistically powerful quilt?
Oh, so many things. A strong design, a strong contrast, and sometimes what it is that I find compelling in a quilt, I won't notice until I get very close to the quilt. Maybe it's the stitching in the background, or some other tiny embellishment that you don't see when you're standing back and looking at it on the wall, but when you walk up close to it, oh, look what they did. So, it could be anything. But sometimes it's the story behind the quilt. It could be, like my grandmother's quilts, visually they're not that compelling, but when you begin to hear the stories of, oh, well, yes, that was my father's flannel shirt, and I remember that he wore that the day before he died or something. So sometimes it's the quilt itself, and sometimes it's the story behind the quilt, and sometimes it's the quilt artist and their story.
You mentioned quilt artists. So whose works are you drawn to and why?
Carol Breyer Fallert, Ricky Timms, Jane Sassaman, Esterita Austin, did I pronounce her name right?
Close enough.
Bonnie McCaffrey. I'm inspired by Sherry Borm's quilts. But I get to see those up close and touch them if I like, so I have a little added incentive to explore her work.
So tell me more about why you're drawn to their work.
I think that each has found a definite style, and you can kind of look at a quilt, oh yes, that's a Ricky Tim quilt, or oh yes, that's a Carol Breyer Fowler quilt, before you even get up to it and read the card that's hanging next to it with the artist's name on it. So that they have found their style, and they continue to kind of delve into it and come up with some new element, and I find that exciting and stimulating, I think of it as a good model for my own work. If I can aspire in that direction, I would be very pleased.
Do you get to play often together with Sherry?
No, not only. We email back and forth a lot, and I actually only met Sherry last summer at the farmer's market when she came over to inquire about the prayer flags that were on display, and we got talking about silk screen and working with fabric, and next thing you know, she invited me to her house to look at her studio and look at her quilts. Well, I knew who she was because she's shown quilts in this area for a long time, so when she said, oh, I'm Sherry Bourne, I was so excited to be invited to her studio to look at some of her quilts, and she's very inspirational.
How do you want to be remembered?
Oh, you know, I don't know that I care about whether I'm remembered or not. I guess I do when it comes to my family and my children and so forth. If they remember me as someone who loved them and cared and tried to do my best, then I will be very happy.
What do you think is the biggest challenge confronting quilt makers today?
You know, I read this question on some of the interviews on the internet, and I have no idea. I don't really think of myself as a part of the dedicated quilting community. I just kind of dabble in it here and there, so I couldn't even begin to speak for what they might be challenged.
So what's your biggest challenge?
Dragging out the sewing machine and taking over my dining room, which is kind of the heart of the house. And I have a group that meets here every week, so it has to be cleared off of the table every Thursday no matter what. And, yeah, just committing to having a mess in the middle of the house is my biggest challenge.
Do you ever see seeing yourself having a dedicated space?
Not in this lifetime, no. My house is very small. It's a bungalow under 1,000 feet. I don't know where I'd put a studio.
So why is quilt making important to you?
It's important to honor the tradition of my grandmother. I hope my grandchildren will have fun memories of them opening their Christmas present and saying, oh, it's another quilt. Gee, I don't need it. But look at this one. Isn't it fun? You know, it has monsters on it, or it's in vibrant neon colors. And that they will, when they have grandchildren, that they will look back and say, you know, my grandma made me quilts, and that was special to me. And maybe I'll make quilts, too.
What do they think of your quilt making?
Oh, they're really small. I don't think they...
Oh, what about your family?
Oh, I think they have pride in all of us and whatever it is that inspires us and whatever accomplishments they make. My sister is the quilt maker in the family, and I can't take that away from her. And she does beautiful work, and She has a beautiful dedicated studio. She turns out many, many quilts every year. I'm lucky to make one or two, so I doubt that I'll be remembered as the family quilter.
Is there anything you'd like to share that we haven't touched upon?
No, Karen, I don't think there is.
Let me just ask you one more question. In what ways do you think quilts have special meaning for women's history in America? You've talked a lot about quilt making in the past, so I just...
And I don't know that it's unique to America. My guess is that, you know, women all over the world have made quilts to, out of necessity to sleep on and to sleep under. I was real fascinated by quilts I saw in India that were more like futons, but they called them quilts. And they were tied, but they were what we would call a mattress. Only they're, you know, more like a thin futon, and that's what they sleep on. So I know that it's kind of a worldwide thing, and it's I sew on this treadle machine, and imagine what these women, what their experience was, that, you know, they had to cut up last year's outgrown clothing in order to make blankets to keep their family warm, and they did it under conditions that were less than optimal with a treadle machine if they were lucky enough to have one, and by hand if they didn't. And I think it's important to kind of honor those women by continuing the tradition.
Well, I think this is a wonderful way to conclude our interview. I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to share with me.
I thank you so much, Karen, for the work that you're doing in preserving this heritage.
Oh, thank you. So we're going to conclude our interview at 1:37.